Hi, everybody. I'm Amy Johnson. Thanks for joining us this week for the Hooks Baseball Podcast. Today, we welcome Julia Morales, sports anchor and reporter from AT&T Sportsnet Southwest, and we'll also be talking with Hooks infielder Jake Adams on his standout 2019 season, as well as his path to professional baseball with the Houston Astros. But first, it's our privilege and delight to welcome in the Hooks' very own Maggie Freeborn. Maggie's the director of business development here with the Corpus Christi Hooks. Maggie, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm glad we can have you join us today. So how are things at the house? I'm sure it's probably been an adjustment. You have two kids at home, correct?
I do. I have one that's in school and one that's not in school yet. So I have it pretty lucky that I'm only teaching one child right now.
Oh, good. Good. So what kind of things have y'all started doing to pass the time? I know during the day, you know, you've got to work and they're trying to do school and stuff like that. And what kind of fun stuff are y'all doing?
We go outside, we ride bikes, we try to stay as active as we can because it's hard, like the not having a good routine in place and structure. Because every day is different. So we at least try to get outside for an hour every day, whether it's riding bikes, whether we're swimming in our pool, whether we're playing baseball, playing on the park in our backyard. I mean, it's hard, but we're adjusting.
Yeah, definitely. And Maggie and I are good Snapchat friends. So we exchange Snapchats of my dog and her kids. So I think one of my favorite things you sent the other day was when your daughter, she was like on her little laptop while you were on your laptop. And I thought that was the cutest thing.
I wanted to be like mommy and it kind of just melted my heart. So I was like, okay, little baby, you got this.
I love it. Well, keep hanging in there, you know, keep sending and posting things for us. We love it. Let's jump into the work side of things. So you're our director of business development here at the Hooks. So obviously partnerships are huge, like the part of your job. So what has that been like working with them throughout this process?
It's been good. I've been trying to stay as involved with them as I can without getting too into it. Most of our partners are essential workers and we have to give big ups to all of them, especially with Spawn and Driscoll and all those healthcare workers. We can't thank them enough for everything that they have been doing for our community and keeping us all safe. We have our oil field workers that are still busting their butts and taking care of everything that they can. We have the Port of Corpus Christi that's still going and thriving and doing everything they can just to support our community and be there.
Are there any ones that you've seen have really been out there in the community lately?
I mean, HEB, look at them. HEB, I think the entire United States of America needs to mold their grocery stores after HEB because you know what? They kill it. They do fantastic. They are Texas.
I know. I went to shop for my mom's mom the other day and I was like, yeah, you can go to Target. And I was like, no. Like, I'm going to go to HEB.
HEB Plus all the way. They got everything there.
Chatting with Maggie Freeborn of the Hooks. Maggie, you and your husband, you know, you're raising a family here. Corpus Christi with your two kids and your husband, he's from George West. And I know you attended A&M Corpus Christi here too. So what has been y'all's impression of the city rallying together and the community's response to everything?
It's been good. I have a lot of friends that are essential workers and I watch them still be safe and be brave and get out there every single day to do the things that they can do to better our community. I see a bunch of our local business owners out there still trying to support each other, our small business owners, our local politicians down here trying to lift everyone up and come and support these small businesses. And that's what we have to do. We have to rally behind them and we have to stay local and stay in our community. And that's how Corpus is going to thrive going forward, as long as we stay together and support small businesses, support local. That's going to be the best way to do it.
I know, speaking of local businesses, let's talk food. That's my favorite topic. Have you all been able to go out to any local restaurants lately? You have any recommendations of who's got the best curbside right now?
Ooh, obviously Brewster, because, you know, Brewster Street. I just miss going to the playground because my kids lived there. We're a Drunken Noodle fan. Drunken Noodle's big. Rudy's has great curbside, even though I believe they're still open since they're a gas station. So they're considered essential, I think. I'd be wrong on that one. So What else? There's a couple more. I mean, Bluffalo Wings and Co. They're great. The House of Rock, that you can't beat that one. So.
But yeah, I saw House of Rock. They partnered up with the local brewery too, and they're selling the beer out of there too. I think that's awesome that the businesses there are partnering up for that.
It is. It is. If they don't support each other, then I mean, everyone has to support each other right now.
Is there anything, you know, with the sponsors that you've been working on and our partners, and like the communication has been so different? How have you adjusted to that?
No, most of our partners have been so understanding. The communication is still mainly through emails right now. I mean, we'll pick up the phone and we'll get on calls here and there. But they've all been so understanding of the current situation. And I think everyone's just ready to get back to the ballpark, to get back to Whataburger Field, to get back to watching our beloved Hooks the field, sing the national anthem, eat some popcorn, hot dogs, drink some beer. I mean, they are ready to get back out there. So that's been the main communication is, hey, we're just ready to get back out there. So.
Yeah, definitely. You're going to make me be the first person to cry on Hooks Baseball Podcast.
I mean, it's hard. The situation, it's hard. I mean, having my children at home and not being able to go to the ballpark at least two or three times a week and to stretch their legs and run around and watch these players do something so amazing. It's hard. And being a mom, a working mom, and trying to teach and trying to still do everything that I do, the struggle is real. And every day it's harder and harder, but we're going to get back. We're going to be stronger and better than we were before. And community is going to rally around us Hooks, and we are going to have a great, great season once we can get going again.
We're so thankful for you, Maggie. You're kind of the unwritten mom of the Hooks too. You know? You're always looking out for everyone. So Maggie, she's got her two kids and her husband at home, but she's also got her 33 or so full-time staff members here with the Hooks. So
have all my kids there.
Exactly. So Maggie Freeborn, Director of Business Development here at the Hooks. Thank you again for jumping on and joining us, and hang in there.
All right, girl. Thank you.
Hello again, this is Dan Reiner welcoming a very special guest to the Hooks Baseball Podcast. It is Julia Morales, anchor, reporter, and host with AT&T Sportsnet Southwest, covering the Houston Astros and the Houston Rockets. Julia, how is your quarantine going?
Oh, it's crazy. You know, it's okay. I have to say that it is actually going well just because we're healthy and everyone in my family is healthy. Everyone's doing what they're supposed to be doing. But it is, it's just hard. You know, it's hard to be April, whatever day it is, who knows what day of the week it is, and there not be a baseball game. And every day that I go outside and enjoy, you know, we've had some great weather in Houston actually, but it just feels like every day I go outside and the sun starts to go down, I should be at a ballpark. This is that time of year where it's all, you know, it's just the best time of the year. We're getting started. Guys are starting to really warm up. The sun goes down a little bit later, and it's just not the reality. So it's hard not to get bummed. It's hard not to get down, especially if you're attached to the news and you're keeping up with what's going on in the world. There's just a lot of scary times for a lot of people right now. But I, you know, aside from all that, I have to say that we are healthy and super grateful for that, because that's what's most important right now.
Right. It's great to hear that everyone's in good health, obviously. And I think anyone listening to this baseball podcast would say that we wish we were at a baseball field somewhere, wherever it is. But I think you're in a fortunate position in that at least your employer, AT&T Sportsnet, I've seen on social media, you've been busy with keeping up with the Astros players and on Instagram Live and Twitter. So I guess, first of all, how does it feel to have those interactions with them? Obviously, you know, in a normal world, you would be at the stadium in the clubhouse interviewing those guys and, you know, talking to whoever you want. But for you now, you have to kind of track them down and, you know, make your free time align with their free time. And so how does it feel to have those interactions virtually? And second, what is their consensus, reaction, how they're doing overall?
Yeah, the interactions, I should say, are awesome. Just because I miss these guys, you know, we drive each other crazy over the course of a season, and it happens very quickly just with the amount of time that you spend interviewing them. And, you know, just you see them everywhere you go, especially for those of us in the travel party. I mean, they are your family, so you're allowed to want time away from them as well, you know. And so it's funny that I'm bugging these guys now for an interview. And I'm like, wait, I'm only going to talk to you once every couple of weeks or something just for a catch up. That's way better than me bugging you before the game, after the game, you know, every single day. So we try to have some fun with that, but it's awesome. It's awesome to be able to just see what's going on in their worlds. You know, I mean, we're all doing this in our own ways, and we're all in a situation that we've never been in before. And we're all at home, which is very strange for those of us who work in baseball, especially this time of year. And to spend this many hours within your own, the walls of your own home, is crazy. So I love getting into other people's living rooms, you know, or their kitchens or their backyards, and just seeing what's going on. And they're spending a crazy amount of time with their families, which they love. But it takes them getting used to, you know, we all went through the off season. We all got that time with the people that we need to spend it with. And you go visit the family members. And, you know, if you have kids, then these guys are spending that good quality time with their kids, and then spring training starts. So mentally for the entire family, these guys are good about, okay, it's time to work. And then you're in this zone for, I guess I should call it, for however many months, where you do get a little bit of time with your family, and then you cherish the moments you do get. But all of a sudden it was like we were kicked back into off season mode. So a little bit of a transition for the wives, who all of a sudden have a full house, you know, and they're getting some help with kids. I love hearing those stories. And then, you know, some players didn't exactly make it all the way back to their homes, maybe their off-season homes. A lot of them, not a lot of them, but a few of them did stay in the spring training area for the Astros, which is West Palm Beach. Now, there was a couple of guys out there. Some of them came to Houston because they wanted to start working out, not knowing the future. It's just, it's interesting where everyone kind of landed and how they got there. I talked to Dustin Garneau, the Astros catcher, who is from California. And so they had their car shipped, and then he needed to get it back. And so he had to drive it home, which is probably not something he's done since the minors, you know, because once you get to the majors, you can usually afford to have that thing shipped instead of driving across the country. So it's stuff like that. It's just been really nice to see these guys be just humans. And that's what our jobs as broadcasters are a lot of the times, and sideline reporters, especially for me, is to tell those stories and to bring that side of a player to the fan. And this is the best way to do it on Instagram Live, where somebody has bad Wi-Fi and I'm talking to Jack Mayfield, and he's got his pictures of his baby behind him. It's just, we're making the best of it. Right. But it is, you know, I'm also getting some information from these guys. They are talking to each other. There's a line of communication, especially at that big league level, some group texts going on. They don't know a lot, but it is nice to kind of get their perspective on what's going on right now. And it doesn't sound like we're going to have baseball in the immediate future, but they are still pushing to have games one day. So we'll all look forward to that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you bring up a good point of actually getting into the living rooms of, you know, these stars, people that you normally just wouldn't be able to see behind the scenes, really, from outside mm-hmm. of what you see on the field in the clubhouse. And, you know, I think the NFL draft, which was just last weekend, that kind of allowed for that too. And, you know, I think that's why it had high ratings, because there's nothing else sports related on, and B, because it was a unique viewing experience, something that we've mm-hmm. never had, and probably something we'll never have again. And, you know, I saw, I think Miles Straw, you did an Instagram Live with, and he brought his little kid in with him too. And, you know, it's funny that you bring up the just the family, the wives being around and having, you know, more family time, really. And that's probably not something that you're used to, right? Because your husband, Matt Clark, I mean, he's a professional baseball player. You're constantly on the road during the baseball season. So what is it like for you personally? You know, you probably don't see him very much during the months of April to September. So what has it been like for you to be around him more?
Yeah, what I was saying about, you know, these families are, they just have it. They have a system. They have it down. If you've been in baseball a long time, you understand those months in the off season and how important they are and the things that you can accomplish in that time. And then, you know, when spring training rolls around, what you have to do to get yourself ready. And I'm not kidding when I say you're mentally prepared for spring training in the year, because, like, I mean, you guys know too, it's just such a grind. And like, once you're in, it's like that jump rope, you know, the double dutch, you like jump in and you can't get out. Like, you're in it until, you know, and if you've been an Astros fan or you've been around the Astros here lately, it's till November. And when you can actually stop and take a breath. So for Matt and I, my husband, it's the same way. And we've been in this baseball world ever since we've known each other, ever since we dated. He was in the minors, but he's played in Japan. He's played back over here in the States, and then he went to the Mexican League, which he's been there for the last few seasons. So he got ready to go to his season. I was actually in West Palm Beach with the Astros, saw you guys there, and we were getting ready to do some broadcasts when the whole world, kind of the sports world at least, shut down on that fateful day. It was March 12th, and I remember that because it was an off day for the Astros, but I happened to get there, and I wanted to go to the backfields and watch the minor leagues, and I remember there was a Yankees game. The Yankees were in town at West Palm Beach playing the Nationals, and that place was absolutely packed. You know, there was just people just crawling all over that place. And I kept thinking, this can't be right. You know, like, this isn't right. Sure enough, an hour later is when Major League Baseball shut it all down. So I came home, my husband came home a couple of days later because Mexican League followed suit. You know, they decided to postpone their season pretty quickly as well. There's a lot of unknown with that too. And even more so because I follow the baseball news here. I can read on Twitter. I can jump on all these websites and at least get the little pieces that some reporters are gathering. But when it comes to Mexican League Baseball, I can't read enough Spanish. I don't know the language well enough to even start to go through articles or to know what their numbers are daily. Or we're trying our best to keep up with it. He's got some good contacts over there. The other thing that happened with him this summer that was just a huge bummer in all of this was the Olympics. And, you know, he helped Team Mexico get to the Olympics. So they qualified. So they were heading that way. End of July, we thought we'd both be. I took off work and everything. I took off days on the schedule. And I gave myself 10 days away from the Astros to go watch my husband play in Tokyo with Team Mexico. And we couldn't wait. And he couldn't wait. You know, he's been playing for a long time. That was definitely going to be a highlight of his career. And of course, they postponed it. But you guys know in baseball that the future's so unknown and nothing's promised. So you don't know how this season's going to go for you. You don't know if you're going to play well enough next season. There's injuries. You know, there's just so much that could happen. And it was just such a bummer. So, you know, a little bit on what's going on with him, but we are enjoying this time together. We are getting this house together for the first time ever, because, you know, the other thing is, like, we've had off seasons, but you want to travel and you want to have date nights and you just want to relax and you don't want to, you know, it's like, you don't want to work. You just worked. And here we are with a little extra time. So he's been on his hands and knees doing some home projects and fixing sinks. And we're deciding to paint a few things, which I'm sure a lot of other people are doing right now too. So it's a different kind of bonding experience, watching a lot of Netflix, waiting for the next Jordan episodes to come out for The Last Dance, all of that. But we're just kind of taking advantage of that time. Definitely a lot of extra time that we're getting together here, though.
It's really unfortunate for all the Olympic athletes who weren't able to, you know, obviously go this year, but hopefully next year, like you said,
yeah,
you know, if he stays in good enough shape. And you never know, you know, with the older players, just how your body's going to hold up year to year, especially if, you know, how's his training been? I guess you can give some insight, because we've seen some players who say that, you know, they're totally off their regimen, or they're eating better, but not necessarily working out as much, because, you know, at this point in the season, they wouldn't be really in the weight room.
Right. Right.
But now with so much free time, maybe they are. And, you know, I don't know what he might be doing to stay in shape.
Yeah. I mean, he works out at a place where there's a lot of pro athletes that work out here in Houston, Dynamic Strength Training, a really great gym. They've got a few of them, so there's a place to hit. However, you know, they were trying their best to make the groups as small as they possibly could before we were all ordered to stay at home. And that's when things got tricky for him, because before that, you know, he was able to go up there with one or two people. They were sanitizing the heck out of everything. At least, but at the same time, what were they staying so ready for? What were they staying so in shape for? Why does your timing need to be so good at, you know, when you don't know if it'll be 3 weeks, 6 weeks, months out before you're facing live pitching again? But that's like a mental thing for these guys too. I mean, they want to be close enough to be ready to head to spring training and feel like they're ready to go or close to ready to go. So, you know, that things kind of switched when he wasn't able to go to that gym, and now he's been working out at home. Thank goodness he was able to borrow some weights and get some things accomplished, but he doesn't feel great about it. You know, I mean, it's just, he wishes he could do more, and he wishes he was hitting every day, and it's just that time of year. And so, yeah, it's just, I think when there's more clarity of, hey, it's time to start ramping up, or, you know, maybe we're getting over this thing and maybe there could be sports. That's when, they'll put a little more emphasis on getting to a place where you could hit or face some live pitching. And it's just, it's hard, but especially for all these guys who, you know, they have their regimens. Like you said, I mean, these are, and it's not just baseball players. Can you imagine what NBA guys are going through right now? If you can't run up and down a court, then, you know, it takes those guys a long time to really get their legs under them in an NBA season. If you've ever covered one or been around one close enough, you know that, these guys are completely different players 2 months in, just because they finally gotten themselves into shape. So, man, it's definitely thrown a curveball and a wrench, whatever you want to call it, in everyone's way of doing things, especially for these pro athletes who are so used to being at the top of their game all the time. And this is kind of just a wait and see game.
Me personally, I'm obviously not a pro level athlete, but I'm a runner, and I agree with you that there are definitely, you have to be in a certain amount of shape to be able to even, you know, play a scrimmage game of basketball. So for guys to be running up and down the court, you know, you have to assume there's going to have to be a 2 or 3 week, you know, leeway just to get guys back in shape, because you don't know how motivated some guys are, or maybe they don't have, you know, that coach who needs to be yelling in their ears to, you know, to get in the gym or whatever it may be, or maybe they just don't have the access right now. But, you know, so that's always something to keep in the back of your mind, is not only the logistics of, you know, making games happen, but it's actually putting out a product on the field that, you know, even resembles what we're so used to after so much time off, I think.
Yeah, no, that's so true. I mean, these guys don't want to, I mean, sure, can you start the season very quickly? Okay, yeah, but that's not what Major League Baseball is. I mean, it's why we love that game so much. And it's these guys prepare themselves in such a way before this, you know, all year now. I mean, it's why these guys throw so hard now. It's why these guys hit the ball so far now. It's just, there's so much prep that goes into it. I can't imagine them having to just like, okay, just throw yourself together and get out on the field, go get them, boys. They're just not wired that way. And you think about guys who, like a Justin Verlander, who's studied and researched, and, you know, he goes, takes it as far as like how much sleep he needs at night and working on his back. And I mean, it's just like the amount of things that these guys think of. I talk about my husband and just not having the weights and hitting. I mean, there's guys that take it to extreme levels and have access to different doctors and people that can help them. And it's just so much bigger than like you and I, like you were saying, like get out there and just keep running, you know, just stay in shape. This is a whole different ball game for a good reason. I mean, these guys get paid and for what they're worth. And it's just, they're superhuman at times because of their abilities. And then it goes back to prep. So, yeah, every guy I've talked to so far, it feels like they would want or push for, you know, a couple of weeks, 3 weeks of a spring training ish, if you will, you know, not exactly like spring training, but something like that to prepare their bodies and to feel like they're not going to get hurt. Gosh, I mean, then you throw injuries in the mix. I mean, you don't want pitchers rushing back. You don't, there's just so much that goes into it. So we'll see. I mean, I think the Players Association and the players are definitely going to have a say when it comes to, hey, we're, you know, we need to get ready first before we can actually put a good product on the field for our fans.
Right. So prep is actually a good transition into, I want to discuss your job, because I think it's so unique in that it's essentially threefold, at least in my eyes. You're the primary breaking news reporter for anyone tuning into an Astros broadcast or even a Rockets broadcast when you're working those games. Plus, you're a features reporter for Astros Bases Loaded and features that you might work on, you know, in-game, pre-game, whatever it may be. But then there's also the variable aspect of going into the stands to interview a player's family member, you know, if they're making their debut or some milestone, or being, you know, in the camera well to capture a dugout celebration on your phone. So I guess, can you just walk us through your daily or perhaps weekly process of how you prepare for, you know, going into a game?
That's a good question. So it is definitely more of a daily thing. You know, I start out the year like a spring training, and I prepare a lot for these spring training interviews just so I can get a lot out of them early on and then build off some of the stories that I've gotten from these players. So there's that prep, you know, just kind of getting ready for the season. What are our big themes this year? What do we want to focus on? What are some of the it's just like the players in particular, like George Springer, a free agent, you know, how do we want to tell his story this year? There are some big things that we can do before the season even starts. However, once you get going, it is literally day by day. And for me, you know, and it builds too. I mean, guys go on runs. Justin Verlander's always reaching some kind of incredible milestone. You know, those stories are kind of laid out for you and you follow them. And, you know, when the day comes, that's your big day to report on it, or that, you know, you're building, you're grabbing your interviews about it before it happens. I mean, that's not so much daily as it is, you know, you're planning, but that's part of my job too, of being with the team. So it's an incredible opportunity to be a sideline reporter that travels with the team, because there's just nothing like it. And the access that you get is one thing, but the fact that you're with them every day and you're able to, you know, come back to a story that you wanted to follow up on, or, you know, talk to somebody, talk to a Verlander when he's in Detroit. I mean, that interview is different than talking to him 5 days prior about going to Detroit. You know what I mean? Like, once he walks in that building and sees those familiar faces from when he first started his career, that's a completely different interview. So that's a really cool part of my job. And then being there when things happen, you know, it's just so instant and immediate to get the reaction of the guy that just had 6 hits in a game, like a George Springer, and, you know, getting the reaction from him and all his teammates, because I was there in Oakland. So, you know, stuff like that falls in your lap, and then, you know, you do your research about things that are happening around that or that are tied to that. But like you said, there's more to it as far as like the families in the stands. I love doing those. And it's one of the reasons why I love baseball, is because it is so special. Guys work so hard to get there. There's so many people that are involved, and you don't know that until you get really close and you start to meet these people and you realize that it wasn't just a mom. It was a mom and a grandma and a cousin that helped him, and a hitting coach that he met along the way, and then a high school coach. And those are the people that are at the games. And when you walk up in the stands, like I get a chance to do, and sit down in that family section, because I have the ability to do it. I'm there, and I've got the microphone, and a lot of people want to talk to me because they know they want to share the stories of how they even got there from Timbuktu, and they all had to get on a plane and they had 6 hours notice. I mean, all that stuff it kind of just happens. And I love that. I just absolutely love that part. So, you know, some of that is prep. Some of that kind of just happens as it goes. You never know what people are going to say on live TV either, which is a fun part of interviewing family and friends. And then, you know, when because I do travel, going back to that, I also can share things with fans that maybe they'll never get to experience. So different ballparks and the food. You know, we used to have a ton of fun with ballpark food back when the team wasn't as great, because it was hard to watch sometimes what the Astros were doing in those rough years. So we made a point to, you know, we would obviously call the game, but when we had a chance for some comedic relief, or, you know, just something to brighten everyone's day, or to tell a funny story, or whatever it may be, we took those chances back then. And that led to a lot of fun food segments, or, you know, in this city, you can find this museum. And, you know, so some of that is for maybe the fan that wants to go visit that ballpark on the road. And maybe they want to cross some things off the list. The other part is so much for the fans that will never get a chance to go. I mean, we understand it's hard to get to a baseball game. A lot of people don't even live in these cities and will never get to them. And that's what I want to do too. I want to share some experiences. I want to show you some things you might not have known. And that's a big part of the job as well. But yeah, I mean, the social media stuff has made it way more fun. It's a little more complicated now trying to do your reporter job, but also be a social media expert when, you know, when everyone's kind of waiting for you to get the reaction because they know you're sitting closer than anyone else. And that's turned into some really fun stuff that I've gotten because these guys play it up. I mean, the Astros have been a really fun team to watch. I've been super lucky to cover a club like this for the last few years. But it's an enjoyable part of my job as well, because it's the fun part. And there's a lot of fun that happens, win or lose, every single day when you're at a ballpark. And so I like to share that as well for people who just aren't there and their eyes and ears. And at the end of the day, that is my job. So yeah, like you said, I mean, it's a little bit of everything. There's a lot of different, I'm a lot more versatile than maybe the word sideline reporter comes off to be. But it's the best job. It's the best job in the world. And it's why I'm going on year 8 of it. Because I love it so much.
Well, first of all, we at The Hook certainly appreciate when you and your producers at AT&T Sportsnet give us any kind of play on any of your segments, whether it's on Astros Bases Loaded or, you know, talking about us of a recent call up or whatever it is. And so I understand, I know that you spent time covering the Round Rock Express actually at your previous job, which was as a sports reporter in Austin before making the jump to the big league. So what do you recall that transition from AAA to the majors being like for you? And is there anything that you miss about minor league ball that you don't get to experience at the major league level?
Ooh, these are good questions. Yes. So I was working in local news in Austin, but I was at a 24-hour news channel, and it's changed so many names. It was YNN when I was there. I think it was Time Warner Cable for a while. Now it might be Spectrum. But when I say the 24-hour news, there's a point behind it, because we had the ability to cover a lot more than other local sportscasts did. You know, if you turn on a local sportscast at night, you might catch 2 minutes of, you know, quick Texans highlight here, an Astros highlight. What do the Rockets do? Good night. I mean, you know, for people who watch the news, you'll know what I'm talking about. On this 24-hour cable channel, not only could we go longer on our sports segments, but we had a whole sports channel that was 24 hours. And so we actually ended up having the rights to Round Rock Express games. And with that, so we'd have, you know, Cappy would be calling the game, Michael Capps would be calling the game on the radio, and then we'd have a couple of cameras and that they would show the game. It was pretty simple, but it was awesome. And we also, with that, had a show called The Express Zone. And it just worked out. I've always loved covering all sports. Like, I'm just a sports fanatic. And I was covering all sports in that job and all the jobs prior to that. But when we had that opportunity, they sent me out to a lot of baseball, assignments. I mean, it was like, hey, I became the one that they just reached out to all the time, that they kept sending me early on, which is totally fine. I had no complaints. But with that, I started learning a lot more about just the minor league baseball world. I mean, you think you know baseball, but you don't know it until you know minor league baseball. And I know you all agree with me down there with the Hooks. There's a whole other layer of this sport that's so awesome. And I was learning it, and I became really close with, you know, the coaching staff was really great to work with. A lot more access that you get because they don't have a lot of media. And if you're someone that's around every day and if you're asking good questions, they'll start to really spend some time with you. So Terry Clark was the pitching coach there, who is now my father-in-law, which is how I met my husband. But he was a person that I asked a million stupid questions to in the beginning. And then my questions got better. You know, it was just like little things that were going on, because, I mean, you hear of a player getting optioned, and then that's kind of all you hear. You know, you don't really follow the story. But in the minors, like, you're following guys in their rehab, and the guys that do get optioned, the guys that get designated and then all of a sudden land on that team, guys that come from, you know, other clubs that land on this team that are trying to just keep their baseball career alive. Just the stories were fascinating. And at that time, it was the Rangers as well, and that was a really good team up there. And so there were some guys that were stuck. It was Chris Davis, who was trying to figure it out. Why could he hit 3 home runs a game in Round Rock and he struck out 4 times a game in the majors? I was in AAA for that. And I watched a lot of great players come through. Like Leonis Martin showed up, knew not one word of English back then. Martin Perez didn't know any English. I was trying to work on my Spanish so I could at least like get a feel for who these really great prospects were. I mean, these were like big names that were showing up, and I was the only one there covering them with a camera, and I wanted something to report, you know, and so I was getting help, and I was just, I had the best time, and I really fell in love with the game in a way that that led me to this job now. And I was actually covering the Rangers spring training. It wasn't the Rangers really, because they would send me to spring training to cover really the guys that were going to show up in Round Rock. But I was actually there when I got the call from the Astros to have the job in the majors. And it was like my call up, and I was in tears. It was a dream job. I mean, I was going to the show, and I also didn't have to use a camera anymore. I was going to have someone shoot for me, which was amazing, which is a really big deal.
What a luxury.
I know, for somebody who'd been doing one man band this whole time. I was so excited to go. But huge change. I mean, gosh, it was a huge change, because I did go from being someone that could write, edit, produce, shoot, and do all of that, and maybe not be all that great at one thing, but I could do it all, to having to be a really good reporter. Like, you have one job, you have one team, and that's it. And so it was a little bit of a shift there. Also, I mean, covering a baseball team every single day is a lot different. Like, I mean, I was covering the Express a lot, but until you cover a team, like, you can't go anywhere else but that ballpark and talk to that team with that one manager. I mean, that's hard, especially when my first year was 2013 and they only won 51 games. I mean, it was really hard in the beginning. It's like, what the heck do I ask these guys after they've lost their seventh in a row? You know, I have nowhere to go. I have no ideas left. I had some hurdles I had to jump and figure out. Those were some serious challenges just from a work standpoint. Like, I had to figure out how to think of ways creatively to bring Astros stories and baseball. I mean, it was hard. And it was also like, the travel was like unlike anything I'd ever done in my life. And I didn't even, you know, I couldn't even figure out where my way around Houston, because when I got the job, I kind of just took off, and I wasn't home enough, you know, to even know where my own apartment was half the time, because I spent so much time at the ballpark or on the road. So it took a good full year for me to figure out the job. And then I would say another year when the team started getting better is when I started getting more confident. I started to learn my way around Houston and really kind of falling in love with it. And then the team got really good on me. You know, in 2015, it just like, it shot off like a rocket. It felt like, just with the way that things turned around, and so blessed that I was there for it. But that's, you know, that's kind of how I transitioned. And that was my call to the majors. I mean, I would do it all over again. You know, it was just, there were some really hard times in there. But I would do it all over again, because it was so worth it. And it was so much fun looking back on some of the experiences that I gathered from doing all of that. Just really cool and really great timing on my part to right. be there when, you know, when things were tough, and then to watch all these players.
It's cool to say that, you know, you really were there from the beginning of the rebuild, you know, up through, you know, the World Series runs, and that, you know, right. that's like, there's no other reporter who's able to really say that.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm curious to know, I don't know if, you know, in the beginning this was the case, or if it's the case at all, but in a largely male dominated industry, social media allows us to publicly see a support, I guess a sort of support system for women in baseball, and, you know, that whether it's the media or the front offices or whatever it might be. So I'm curious, is there a sort of camaraderie for you and the other, you know, field reporters or hosts, mm-hmm. whatever it is, you know, whether it's Ana Rizzo in LA or Meredith Marakovitz in New York or Sophia Menard in Milwaukee? Like, do you guys feed each other ideas? Do you get together and have lunch in each other's cities? Like, how does it all work for you guys?
Yes, absolutely. You know, and it took a couple of years for me to figure that out. I was meeting people, which was great. But then it turned into, let's have lunch before we go to the ballpark with some of them. And then, you know, especially for people in my division, like an Emily Jones for the Texas Rangers, who's been around a long time, I looked up to her before I got the Astros job. So a little intimidated at first, and then turns out that she was a great person, to ask questions to when I did get the job. So she's now one of my great friends. And you mentioned Sophia, Alana. There's actually a smaller group, not a smaller group. There's not a ton of us in general, but there's a small group within the group that's super tight, to where, I mean, we've scheduled vacations in the off season. I'm the only one of this group that has spring training in Florida, and they're all in Arizona. So I miss the big Arizona parties that they put together, and they have girls' wine night. I mean, it's just, it's important for, like you said, to ask questions. There's a lot of things that that we go through that no one else on the planet would understand except for another field reporter for a Major League Baseball team. You know, I mean, it's like, it's that specific. Even Kaylee Griffin, who does our Rockets right now, she does a fantastic job. She's just getting started. And so this is her first time to travel with an NBA team, and she'll ask me questions. And of course I'm there for her. I want to be able to help her, but I haven't even experienced an NBA season. So I don't really know, how you even prepare for a road trip where you've got these days off, and do you fly home after that? Like, I can't even answer all of her questions just because of how different it is. And then nobody does what Major League Baseball does, and the amount of games that we have, and the short amount of time that we have, and the long days that we spend at the ballpark. Baseball players are different than or basketball players and football players. And so it's just like, we've got so much in common. I mean, it's like, we know this world inside and out. So why wouldn't we just be drawn to each other and be able to help each other? So the advice is huge. Being able to share silly stories. You mentioned the social media, the things that are tweeted at us, and things that are sent to us that are either offensive or ridiculous or funny, we share them because it's just makes us feel better at the end of the day. It's like, and we're there to boost each other up. And there's a lot of questions, a lot of us have been in this job now. I saw a trend. It happened when I got into the game because it felt like there were a lot of reporters kind of in and out. They would have 1-year contracts and it would be a lot of change. And over the last 6 or 7 years, it's felt like there's been a big group of reporters that have been around, which is, you start gaining a lot of respect. You start building a brand. You become, just a constant. You think 2013, it wasn't that long ago, but if you think about it, like, how much change has there been to the Astros organization from today and back till back then? It's like, consistently, like, I'm one of the most consistent faces that you've had around this organization now, just being a sideline reporter. But that's just, there's a lot that comes with that. And so it's just, there's questions that come with that. I mean, there's pressure that comes with that. There's contracts in the TV world that come with that. So it's so great having a group of strong, smart women who get what I'm doing. That I can lean on every day. And there's just a lot of good people in baseball in general. And, I lean on broadcasters and the host, and it's not just the field reporters. There's just so many good people around the game. And I love my American League people because I see them every year, twice a year. With the division people you see more often in the National League, I wish I saw more of. It's a special time when you do get them in town. I like to host when people come in town. I like to have them at my favorite gym for a workout and then take them to my favorite coffee spot. It's kind of my thing. And so it's a cool little sorority to be a part of, if you will.
Right. I've always kind of wondered what the network would be like. So I guess thanks for that insight. I want to wrap things up here. Staying on this topic of social media, in the time of quarantine, I guess one of the positives, if you can call it that, is that you have used your social media platform at Julia Morales on Twitter to boost your charitable work. I know that you've been fostering puppies for a long time, and you've done some other charitable work. So can you just speak to that and maybe what organizations that you're working with?
Yeah, no, thanks for even asking. Why not, right? I mean, this is the time. I've been involved in one specific nonprofit organization for a few years now. It's called Houston Pets Alive. It's an animal rescue. We rescue animals that are on a euthanasia list here in Houston. So there's two huge animal shelters here. There's Bark and Harris County Municipal Shelter, and they get overcrowded. They just stay overcrowded. And so every day there's a euthanasia list that comes out. 5 p.m. is the deadline. I mean, it's just so morbid and so sad, but a lot of these animals have no reason being on that list other than there just wasn't enough room. And these are animals that are being surrendered, whether they can't, the families can't afford the medical treatment that's needed, or their owners pass away. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into an animal being left at a shelter. And so us as an organization, we pull from those. We have a great foster base, which is what you mentioned, fostering. And that's how I got started. I can't have an animal because of my travel that I just spoke about, and my husband's gone too. But in the off season, we really look forward to helping in that way. And so we've done that, and we've continued to do it. And we're going to, you know, it's been crazy with all of this going on. People stuck at home, they're actually kind of reaching out. They want to foster or they want to adopt. And so we've been able to cleaned out our own facility, but we've cleaned out a lot of surrounding cities here in Houston, their shelters, which has been awesome. I'm just praying to goodness that these animals stay at these homes. I know these families are taking on animals, and you have to be ready in it. And so I'm just worried that when people go back to work, they won't be able to adjust. And so that's my prayer right now, is that every animal will stay and they will not be sent back to the shelter. But I am so grateful for everyone and all the work that they're doing. But yes, we fostered puppies. They actually both got adopted, and I bawled my eyes out having to drop them off because I loved them so much. Because in quarantine, you spend like all this time with them. You know, it's one thing if you have a foster dog that you come home to, you know, you're gone maybe most of the day, and you take care of them at night, and you're helping them transition. But when I had these puppies, I saw every single thing that they did for 2 weeks straight. So it's like the bonding was unbelievable. But yeah, so, you know, it's a passion of mine and my husband's for sure. He's a big animal person. Cats too, we don't foster cats, but a lot of people foster kittens and get those out as they are obviously needing homes as well. But yeah, I mean, it's just a good time. I'm working with the Astros. I'm working with some other organizations. People are just trying to do good right now because there's nothing else we can do but to help those of us who are stuck at home. And if you can, you know, those of us who can help in any kind of way, we should. And so, and that's what I wanted to do. So I'm actually going to volunteer at a place next week and try to help deliver food to families of students who, you know, usually get fed when they go to school. And now that's not happening. So things like that, you know, it's not a lot, and I'm not a bajillionaire, and I would give to everyone that I could, but, you know, time is precious to a lot of these nonprofits. So if you're interested at all, there are ways. I mean, whether it's just donating jars of peanut butter, I mean, there's just so many different ways to help. So that's what I'm doing. I appreciate you even asking them. You know, I find it really important in these times to help others. And I love this city and I love this community as much as I love the country. And I want us to all get back on our feet as soon as possible. So I'm trying to do my part.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's all amicable work. And, you know, we try to give everyone a shout out that we can on this podcast. I mean, that's kind of the reason we're doing the podcast is, you know, to talk some baseball, but also to shine a light on our community organizations here in Corpus and, you know, along the Coastal Bend, and then obviously up in Houston. I'm sure we have some listeners too. So with that, Julia, I really appreciate your time, you know, giving us some really great insight into your profession and, you know, the world of baseball as it stands right now, as we head towards the end of April into May. And, you know, hopefully we'll see you back on the sidelines pretty soon here.
Yes, crossing my fingers. No, thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it.
Greetings and thanks for joining us on the Hooks Baseball Podcast. I'm Mike Coffin, and we're now joined by Hooks infielder Jake Adams. Jake, thank you very much for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure, and you are weathering this storm in Sioux Falls, South Dakota right now. How are you holding up during all this quarantine stuff?
Yeah, it's been kind of tough, obviously, being cooped up almost all the time. Thankfully that my gym that I work out at, I still have access to that. So I'm going 4 days a week doing my stuff there. So getting in the house, and then they shut down all the parks and stuff around us, but I got permission to get on for a little bit and do my baseball related stuff. So it's been all right, but just kind of a crappy situation.
And you were telling me offline that you were mixing in some yoga. What's the regimen there?
Yeah. So my strength coach that I have here in Sioux Falls, he actually hired a gal to come in and do some yoga, and he thought that'd be beneficial for me. And so it took a couple of weeks for me to finally get in there and say, all right, let's do this. And it's actually been really good for me. Obviously, as a first baseman, need to be flexible over there. So I've been working on a lot of flexibility with my hips, my hamstrings and everything. And it's actually been pretty enjoyable to do.
Well, and you also spent some time, I realize not a large amount of time, at third base as well, you know, in your pro career, including last season. Does that kind of also play into the mix a little bit about learning the different positions, increasing your flexibility in that regard?
Yeah, so when I went to mini camp, that's pretty much all I worked on was third base stuff. They just want me to get as comfortable as I can over there. And they've been giving me a couple of drills to do here and there, and been talking to Petit a lot. He's been helping me out tremendously. And going into mini camp, we kind of narrowed some things down, started working on my stance and everything over there, and started feeling good. And then this all happened. So coming into where we are now, Petit's been really good. I've been sending him videos. We've been working on some things, and we actually just hopped on a Zoom call. I just hopped on a Zoom call with him on Friday, and it's been in the situation that we have. It's been really good just to see him face to face and have him kind of go over the video with me. It's been really good, and I think third base is, I'll probably see some more action this year over there, which would be good for my situation. Just kind of have a dual threat doing first and third base stuff.
Jake, referencing Gregorio Petit, the new manager for the Hooks, and Gregorio, long career in the big leagues and in professional baseball in general, a slick fielding infielder. And I got to meet him in spring training. He's been on the podcast before as well, Jake, and he's just a tremendous guy to get to know. And I'm betting through your interactions with him so far, you have to be pretty pumped to be able to work with him over the course of a season.
He's an awesome dude. Like I said, playing in some of those big league games, and obviously having him up there and not going until about the sixth inning, I just kind of sit down and have conversations with him. And it's been awesome to have him around and kind of pick his brain a little bit. Because like you said, he's had a tremendous career in the infield, and he's one of those elite infielders. So having that knowledge as a manager now, it's going to really help not just me, but the other infielders out too. Because he's been to the big league level, and he knows what it takes to get the job done. So it's been really awesome having him kind of around and talking to him about different things.
Well, granted, a small sample size, but a great run for you in the Grapefruit League this year. 9 at-bats, you had 3 hits, including a home run and 5 RBIs, a big day in Lakeland early in camp. What was your big takeaway from your time there in big league spring training outside of working and mixing in third base a great deal?
Spring training hasn't really been my friend last couple of years. I think the last year, I think I got 1 hit all spring training because just been working on different things. And I know it's spring training, so I'm not putting a lot of pressure on myself and whatnot. But going into this spring training, I've kind of narrowed down my swing and kind of getting comfortable with it. So going into mini camp and not really changing a whole lot, and then going up to see some of these big league guys, just kind of being comfortable with where I'm at and getting a couple of hits. It's been really fun, and talking to some of these big league coaches, Dusty Baker and all these other guys, and just kind of have them tweak just little things here and there. And it's been a great experience.
When did this whole idea hit you initially about spring training being in jeopardy? You know, I was up there right when games were postponed and ultimately canceled, and I had no idea. I knew the coronavirus thing was out there. I knew they were taking precautions with how the media was interacting with the players. But honestly, man, it hit me like a ton of bricks when they shut everything down. I didn't see it coming.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird situation too. We were kind of, I think we just got done with a practice or a game or something, and we come back in, and there's some talk about it. And obviously, with the baseball being America's pastime, I didn't think anything of it that we were going to be shut down at all, because just kind of the big business that baseball is. And all of a sudden, I started hearing some more and more information about it, and then talking to the trainers about it. And all of a sudden, I was like, holy smokes, this could be, we could be shut down here. And then all of a sudden, we get the text, and it's like, hey, pack your stuff up in the locker rooms. You guys are going back to the hotel, and we'll be shipping you guys out to go back to your off-season homes. So yeah, it was kind of the same thing. It just kind of hit us all at once.
Do you have a sense about how long you personally will need to get ready once you guys have access to the Astros resources, whenever they can say, okay, opening day is going to be here, you can go to spring training right now? How long do you think you're going to need to be ready?
Probably a couple weeks, just to get some live pitching, seeing some live pitching. I think physically I'm ready. I could probably play a game right now, but just seeing some live pitching is going to be the biggest thing, because obviously we can't get out and see some live pitching right now. So I'll say probably 2-3 weeks at the most for me anyway. It's just to get in there, feel comfortable again, seeing some more live pitching, and get back into the flow of things.
We're chatting with Jake Adams on the Hooks of Baseball podcast, a Carolina League All-Star last year. Finished out his tenure with the Hooks in 27 games, hit very well, and overall had 22 bombs and 87 RBIs. The RBI is second in the Astros system. The home runs ranked fifth among all Houston farmhands. When you look back on your season, Jake, from last year, how do you evaluate it? What worked well for you? What would you like to improve upon?
Obviously, I still want to improve on hitting. That's been my biggest thing so far in pro ball. Obviously, I've had some learning years. Just getting to know some of these other hitting coaches and working with Kanzler last year was really good for me. He's very intelligent in the hitting world. So getting to have him in Fayetteville and starting with him and just kind of narrowing down some things. And one day he sat me down and just says, look, you're a big dude. You can stick the bat out at any time. You can hit it over the fence. You don't have to try hard to get the ball out of the park. So I kind of like, oh, that is true. So I went back and looked at some video of some big league players. And Brantley was one guy that I kind of looked at. Obviously, he's hitting from the left side, but just how calm he is at the plate and just kind of bobs the bat up and down, doesn't have a lot of motion up there. I was like, I think I could do that. So I started working with that a little bit, and I got really comfortable with it, started seeing the ball a lot better. My head was staying still. So just working with him and then moving up and working with Timmy up in Corpus was the same thing. He didn't want to change a whole lot just because of the success I've had. And just like I said, being confident, slowing things down has been a big thing. So I just want to keep working on that going forward.
Jake referencing Tim Lamont, Hooks hitting coach, and Jason Kanzler, who was at Fayetteville last year. He's going to be with the Hooks this year. So Jake will have a chance to work with Jason once again. Jake, you began 2019 with a bang with Fayetteville at Potomac. You had a great night, opening night, 4-for-6, 7 RBIs, including a grand slam. That's what I call setting a tone. What do you recall most about that night?
Like I said before, spring training, coming out of spring training, obviously had one hit all spring training, and I just wanted to come out and just put the bat on the ball, find the barrel again, feel comfortable. And I think the first AB, I might have grounded out or struck out or something. And then after that, started getting the rhythm again. I slowed things down because obviously opening night, everybody's looking forward to it. We're amped up. We're ready to play. So I think that first AB, I was just kind of hyped up a little bit. But after that, I think I got a base hit or a double or something, and then finally hit that grand slam, and I realized, like, all right, the season's going to be all right. I found the barrel again, and just getting it. And obviously, having that type of night, too, for Fayetteville, obviously, because it was a new stadium and everything, which it was kind of a memorable one, just letting Fayetteville know, like, hey, this team that we have here is going to be something special and whatnot. So it was just kind of a cool experience to have that kind of night.
What stands out to me is you're a young guy and you're a prospect still trying to make a name for yourself in the big leagues, but you've been doing this baseball thing for a long time, and how a short stretch of struggles can influence you mentally. And you think the sky's falling each and every day, but it just takes one hit to kind of clear all of that out of the way.
Right. Yeah. That was, I think out my first year in pro ball out in New York, obviously, I struggled a lot. I mean, I think we all kind of had that struggle out in New York, but having that struggle, and I think I was 0-for-22 at one point, and just even getting a little nub hit is just like, okay, we're all right. We're back at it. I found the barrel on the bat.
Well, you did an excellent job getting your sea legs under you in Corpus Christi in the final 19 games. You had 286 with a 972 OPS. And over a stretch of 4 consecutive ball games, you hit a home run in each and every one, racking up 10 RBIs for the effort named Texas League Player of the Week. What clicked for you, Jake, down the stretch?
Just trust myself, knowing that double A's, going from high A to double A is kind of like the big jump in minor league baseball. So knowing that, going in there, staying confident, don't jump out of the zone to hit their pitch, because these pitchers up here can locate a lot better and everything. So it's staying locked in at the plate, waiting for my pitch to hit. And yeah, that little stretch that I had there, I was waiting for one pitch, one spot. And obviously I got those and hit those 4 home runs, whatever. And knowing that if I can do it, doing that in that long stretch or whatever, that I was going to be fine in double A. And like I said, I making that jump too, you kind of get some nerve, like, okay, if I don't produce here, like, this could be the end of the road. So getting a few home runs here and there just kind of reassured me that I was going to be fine.
Well, and two, you mentioned that the competition is a different level at AA, but there's also a lot of stuff that goes along with it. And for the Hooks in particular, the travel is nasty. The shortest bus ride for the Hooks is to Frisco, Texas, which is 7 hours. I believe you were on the trips to Little Rock and to Tulsa. You missed Amarillo, which is fortunate for the Sod Poodles, given that tiny ballpark and the elevation. You'd have certainly had a field day with your power. How did you deal with all the long bus rides? Can you kind of take us inside the bus and give the listeners a window into how you guys, the players, you know, navigate those 8-12 hour drives?
Yeah. The travel in the Texas League is very brutal. Obviously, like, I think my farthest one that I went on was about 12 hours. And I think that was my first bus ride. And I think I was pretty jacked to, okay, like, I know the Texas sucks for travel, but I was kind of ready to be with the guys and everything. But on the trip home, we normally play games and whatnot, play some cards on the bus just to pass some time. But everybody was so exhausted. We know that we had a quick turnaround. So I think the lights were out the minute the bus took out of the left the parking lot and everything. And we each so we take two buses, and we each get a whole row to ourselves. So we get our two seats plus the seats on the side of us. So everybody's lifting up their seats, we're laying down our bedding, and lights are out real early. There's not a lot of talking whatsoever, and we take about one stop normally at a Buc-ee's or whatever, just to grab some food. But
what do you think of Buc-ee's, Jake? You a big
yeah, the chicken strips there. That's, I'm a big chicken strip guy, so stopping at Buc-ee's and getting some chicken strips late at night, it's pretty sweet.
Ever have any late impulse purchases with stuffed beavers or different weird t-shirts, anything like that that you could share?
No, I did not. But I know some guys that did make some of those purchases, and it's kind of funny just watching everybody walking out of Buc-ee's and what they all got in their hands and everything. It's kind of a funny scene there.
Your collegiate story is a remarkable one. You spent 2 years at Des Moines Area Community College before starring for the University of Iowa. In your 2 years at JUCO, you hit 58 home runs in 110 ball games. And then in your lone season with the Hawkeyes, you set the school's single season record with 29 dingers that led the NCAA. And for that production, you were named 2017 Big Ten Player of the Year. Can you explain what takes you from Brandon Valley High School in South Dakota to ultimately the University of Iowa?
Coming out of South Dakota, we don't get a lot of recruiting out of here for baseball wise, just because we get snow sometimes even through May. So we can't get outside. We're practicing inside constantly. And I knew out of high school that I probably was a D1 athlete. And but no D1s were looking at me besides like SCSU and the local ones around here. So I actually had a buddy of mine that played at, DMAC, and he was about 2 years older than me, but from Sioux Falls area, and, got in contact with him, and, he just said, "Hey man, you gotta come up and look at DMAC. It's a great school. I love the coaching staff there." And yeah, I spent my 2 seasons there. In the fall of my sophomore year, committed to University of North Dakota. Cause I just kind of wanted to get that weight lift off my shoulders. Didn't want to worry about it during my sophomore season. And so I had Houston Baptist and University of North Dakota were the two looking at me, and went on visits to both of them and really liked North Dakota. So I committed there, and everything was all fine. Everything, played my season, had a great seat. My sophomore season was a great season that I had there. And I think it was getting around to conference tournament time at the end of the year. We're out at practice, and a coach came over to one of our other coaches, said something about North Dakota. And I thought DMAC was getting a North Dakota kid. Okay, cool, whatever. Go on with practice. And then our ace pitcher at the time, Nick Belzer, he came over and he said, "Hey, did you hear about North Dakota?" And I said, "No, what happened?" He goes, "Yeah, they just announced that they cut their baseball program." And my heart sank. Didn't know what to do. So got down with practice, went up and looked at my phone, and I had probably about 30 missed calls from, I had a buddy that actually played there too. So a couple missed calls from him, some missed calls from the assistant and the head coach and whatnot. And so I called the head coach back, and he said, "Yeah, this is the situation that we have. Hang tight, though. We're having a meeting. We're trying to get the program back. None of us saw this coming, or else we wouldn't have recruited any of you guys and whatnot." So I waited about another week or so, And by that point, I was like, I can't wait any longer. I got to open up my recruiting process again. And by that time, schools already had the recruits, didn't have any money left over. And our hitting coach that we had at DMAC actually played at Iowa for Coach Heller. And he goes, hey, what do you think about playing Big Ten baseball? We got in the car the next morning. We drove up to Iowa and toured the campus. And real quick, absolutely loved the campus. And then talked to Coach Heller up there and Marty Sutherland. And they threw me an offer, which was an offer at the time was more than any of these other schools were giving me. And I was like, okay, it's not a lot, but it's better than what I have. So on the way home, talking to Sean Moore, I was like, this is going to be my best option. So called him back, committed. First day, we got into the weight room and started meeting the guys. And I could tell just talking to some of the guys there that this was a special group that we had. Like, everybody seemed like they've known each other for 10-plus years. And we're all joking around and everything, and which made me feel really good just because that was where I came from at DMAC, was a close-knit group, and we did really well. And our first real games together over Thanksgiving, Iowa took a trip down to the Dominican Republic to do some community work, and then we got to play about four games down there. Really cool experience to get to do that with Iowa. The whole season, really, we played really well and get to the Big Ten tournament. And I think we're like the fifth seed or something, go through the Big Ten tournament, and we had a couple barn burner games there. I think Minnesota was one of them that we went into like 13 innings with. It was the longest Big Ten baseball game, I think, in history. Lasted, I think, until like midnight or something. After we got to that game, we made it to the championship, and it was us versus Northwestern, which was like the AC that they just snuck into the Big Ten tournament. And we come out and we're all amped up. We're ready to play. And I think it was like 8-1 in the fourth inning. And at that point, we all kind of knew that this was a special team, because I was never won a Big Ten baseball championship ever. And winning that was just a very, very special moment. And obviously topping it off with the season that I had, which it was just something that I've never would have ever dreamed about, ever playing college baseball.
Well, and it ultimately resulted in you being drafted by the Astros in the sixth round, the highest pick out of Iowa, University of Iowa, since the 90s. So a tremendous campaign by you and the Hawkeyes that season. Before we let you go, Jake, let's go back to South Dakota and at Brandon Valley High School, obviously a baseball star, though you're a linebacker in football, a center in basketball. What made you pick baseball? Was it your first love, or did you just have an idea that you were better at baseball than the other sports?
Yeah, so my dad served in the National Guard for 20 years, and it was, I think I was about six or seven years old, and he was gone for 18 months over in Iraq for his deployment. And so my mom was trying to raise three kids and whatnot, and baseball just came natural to me. So she wanted me to play, but she needed someone else to help her out, like take me to ball games and everything. My next door neighbor, we're the same age, or we're the same class, but he was a year older just based off of like pre-K and whatnot. So he had to move up to play at the a higher level. So they bumped me up, and talking to some of these coaches, they came back and were like, yeah, we want this AJ Garrow kid, but we don't know who this Jake Adams kid is, but he has to play with AJ, so I guess we'll take both of them. And we're actually family friends with now the coach that I had, and he tells the story all the time, and he goes, yeah, the youngest kid out there is 7 years old playing with 10-year-olds, was our best player and whatnot. And I think my first home run that I had on a regular little league field was at age 8 or 9 or whatever. Wow. And I knew that baseball just came natural to me. I loved it. I loved all the sports that I played. It's just kind of in whatever season it was in, that was my favorite sport at the time, but I knew baseball was going to take me to the highest level. And so I put more effort into baseball than I did the other sports.
Hooks infielder Jake Adams. Jake, thank you very much for taking the time today. And thanks as well for your family service. We look forward to seeing you live and in person at Whataburger Field very soon.
Yes, thank you again for having me.
That's it for this week's Hooks Baseball Podcast. We'd like to thank our special guests, Maggie Freeborn, Julia Morales, and Jake Adams. Please let us know what you think and who you'd like to hear from. And be sure to subscribe on your podcast app of choice to catch the next episode hot off the mic. For my colleagues, JD Davis, Dan Reiner, and of course the wonderful Mike Coffin, this is Amy Johnson. We'll catch you next week.